Welcome to Elevate Maryland, a podcast with Maryland focus and Howard County roots. My name's Tom Cole, and I'm here with my guest co-host, Annie Hader-Shaw. Annie, great to have you again. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I heard the weather was nice outside. I didn't get to go outside, but I did open a storm door, and I opened a window, and I got to see that. Vaccines have opened up for 16 people to 16 and up. I'm seeing the end. I see this light at the end of the tunnel. So that's fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. And speaking of lights at the end of the tunnel, a brood of insects is getting ready to see such a light. How is that for transitions? I'm giving myself points for that. We're here to talk about Brood X today with Dr. Michael Raup from the University of Maryland, one of the foremost experts in cicadas. We were just talking to him in our little pre-show conversation, has all sorts of amazing interviews coming up this week, next week, throughout the entire visitation of Brood X. And we are so honored to have him on Elevate Maryland. Just a few sort of housekeeping matters first, and we're going to talk about this more at the end. But I did want to begin the show by noting that this today is our four-year anniversary. It is Elevate Maryland's four-year anniversary of recording these wonderful shows and participating with all of you listeners. And so I wanted to highlight that. Again, we're going to talk about it more at the end after we have our interview with Dr. Raup, but so excited to have that. And then, as always, want to highlight our third business sponsor. This week's featured business from the third is Stephanie Brown Coaching LLC, run by Dr. Stephanie Brown. This business is all about showing professional women what it means to shift their energy into powering their dreams. You can find Stephanie Brown Coaching on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Steph, S-T-E-P-H, Brown, M-D, or visit stephaniebrowncoaching.com for more information. So we're so proud to be able to feature these wonderful businesses by women of color who are being cultivated and supported by Laura Bacon and her amazing company, The Third. So with that, Annie, why don't you welcome our guest to the show?
More than happy to. Thank you. So I'd like to introduce our guest, Michael Raup. Mike is the Professor Emeritus of Entomology. That's not etymology, it's entomology, an extension specialist at the University of Maryland. He's earned the nickname The Bug Guy from students and fans of his blog, bugoftheweek.com, where he reports on all things bug and insect related. He frequently appears as an expert on Good Morning America, NPR, and other news outlets. He's also been on BBC, CNN, National Geographic's Explorer, The Dr. Oz Show, Tyra Banks, and The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, among others. We should get some background on what that was like. His research focuses on clarifying the mechanisms by which plants escape attack from herbivorous insects, with the goal of helping to create sustainable landscape systems with minimal dependence on synthetic pesticide. His laboratory focuses on developing and implementing integrated pest management programs for landscape, nursery, and greenhouse systems. And his extension programs provide training on the theory and practice of, again, integrated pest management programs to diverse groups, including growers, public and private sector landscape and park managers, as well as private citizens. He's the past president of the Eastern Branch of Entomological Society of America, as well as the award winner of this Distinguished Achievement Award in the Extension Entomological Society of America. So welcome, Dr. Mike Raup.
Wow, Annie, that was TMI. I mean, we didn't have to go down that rabbit hole. You could have just, you had me at the bug guy. So, you know, but thank you very much for that very generous and somewhat dated introduction. But thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here and to share some cicada stories and bug stories with you tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hey, the big boy band is, they're practicing underground. They're getting ready to rock in just a month or so. So yeah, let's go ahead and dig into this thing.
Yeah. So let me ask question number one. Sure. First of all, what are cicadas? And like, is there a difference between locusts and cicadas? I think people know a little bit about locusts, but not really. So if you want to give us like a little bit of a background on what exactly they are.
Okay, great. That's a great question. In fact, that is the topic for my Bug of the Week blog this week, where I asked the question, are cicadas locusts? And the answer is no. Ooh. Locusts are grasshoppers. And This dates back for an awfully long time. It actually dates back to the early colonial period when our colonists saw these creatures coming out of the ground. Remember, several of these groups were escaping religious persecution back in the old country. They got over here. There were millions of these things coming up out of the earth. And they said, OMG, we're back in Egypt. It's the eighth plague again. These are locusts. Locusts are grasshoppers, right? Cicadas are much more closely related to aphids. They have a sucking mouth part. They use that to plug into the roots of trees. They sip a type of liquid in a tissue called xylem. So they're underground for 17 years. It's dismal. It's a COVID-like existence down there. They're social distancing, sucking on plant sap. And then in the 17th year, these teenagers are going to get up and out of the ground and go to the treetops. So locusts, grasshoppers, cicadas, periodical cicadas, basically feeding on liquid tissue from plants.
And what is it about 17 years? I presume that there's certain development that's going on during that time that makes them go from, I understand the eggs are planted in the bark of trees and then they drop down. Right. So could you go over that cycle and why 17 years?
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. And again, this is one of the most bizarre strategies for survival on planet Earth. So to take it from the top, basically the eggs were laid last 14 years ago, in July of 2004. They hatched, dropped down to the ground. They burrowed down to the roots. They'd been feeding underground, developing for these 17 years, growing through various stages, getting ever larger from a few millimeters to the size of my thumb. That's what size they are now. So they've been busy feeding underground, shedding their skins, molting. Then in the 17th year, they're going to emerge massively, simultaneously. And the trick here is to emerge in such vast numbers that you will fill the belly of every predator that wants to eat you, and there are still enough left over to perpetuate the three species that are going to be emerging. It is bizarre, but it's worked for hundreds of thousands, millions of years for these guys. They've got it figured out. The 17-year, the long developmental period, I'm going to take you back to your old biology course. Now, you learned about predator-prey cycles. Remember how the prey would go up and the predators would go up and they'd eat the prey and they'd go down and like this, you know, they track each other through time. Yeah. Man, when you're underground for 17 years, there's no bird, there's no raccoon, there's no other creature that can wait 17 years hoping that you're coming out next year. So that explains the long life cycle. The prime number is very important because it basically keeps these guys in lockstep, because prime numbers are only divisible, as you know, by themselves and the number one. So let's imagine we had broods of cicadas that maybe emerged every two years and 4 years. That means that every 2 years they would interbreed. We could get hybrids. Those hybrids might emerge in year 1, 2, 3, 4. What that does is, Fauci says, it lowers the curve because now you have cicadas emerging in several different years instead of simultaneously. The predators now can track you and eat you into oblivion. Prime numbers only are divisible by themselves in one. So in areas where we have 13-year cicadas, which we have three broods, here in North America, and 17-year cicadas, of which we have 12 broods, where they overlap, they're only going to interbreed every 221 years, not every other year. So those prime numbers keep them in lockstep, makes it hard for the predators to track, keeps everybody on schedule so they can emerge all at once. Massive emergence. It's called predator satiation. It's basically a safety in numbers game.
And if I could ask a follow-up question on that, the 221 years, when was the last time that happened?
Yeah, hey, you know, I've got to go to my big chart of cicada broods to answer that one, okay. My friend. I would have to look back. It has happened in my lifetime. I just don't remember which broods they were.
Yeah, because I'll just say, when I was like 5 years old, 5 or 6 years old, I remember now, I don't know if it was because I was in the suburbs and I was around more trees or what, but I remember them being of a magnitude much greater than any other time in my lifetime. So that's why I was wondering if it might have been that one.
It depending where you are, but hey, Tom, I got to tell you, and Annie, you know, these numbers are incredible. Right now, out in my backyard, I've got about 30 holes per square foot. That translates into 1.3 million cicadas per acre. You know, people say, well, how many cicadas are going to be out, Mike? Well, people say billions. I think it might be trillions of cicadas that are coming out here in just a few weeks. So who knows? There's going to be a lot of cicadas. They're going to occur in 15 states and the District of Columbia, ranging from Georgia and Tennessee up to New York, west to the Mississippi, in Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. So that's going to be a lot of bugs up and out of the ground.
I remember, so I actually remember one of those years. You may have been five, Tom, but I'm clearly a little bit older.
I don't know if it's that clear.
There was, I want to say it was like early 2000s, because I remember I had a very young
Not
child
that
at
little.
The time.
Come on now.
It was 2004, Annie. You got it, 2004.
It was around that. I had a young kid, and I remember going outside, and it just sounded like car alarms constantly, like nothing but unending car alarms. And it was a lot. I remember that. But yeah, I guess the next one we'll have to wait for you to check your chart. But I guess what that means is if it does overlap, if they come out, do we see more wildlife eating them as a result? And I guess.
Oh, yeah. Annie, this is going to be a bounty for everybody. We know that Native Americans feasted on cicadas when they occurred. You know, obviously the colonists were quite fearful about this. They didn't eat too many. But the birds, the raccoons, the fox has already been excavating my backyard, my neighbor's yard, digging up the grubs. There are going to be reptiles. Turtles will eat these things. Fish are going to love these things. Skunks are going to dig them up. Raccoons are going to eat them. Everything on the planet is going to want to eat cicadas, including your cats and dogs. Let the cats play with a couple. They're not going to gorge, but by golly, don't let that golden eat bucket loads of these. Hey, those exoskeletons are hard to digest. They could get a little impacted. So everything in moderation. And of course, human beings are going to be eating cicadas. I will be eating some, I'm sure. And some of our cicada crew members, our graduate students that are participating, we're going to snack on cicadas. They're delicacies.
Go
ahead.
I have like two follow-up questions there, but I'll ask the first one. The first one is, I saw something about copperheads eating. I saw a meme online, and I know you mentioned it a little bit in the pre-show, but tell us about that. Are we going to see more snakes around? Because I'm just not going to leave the house.
Okay. Look, there's no reason. There is no scientific data that I could find to indicate that copperheads are in any way attracted to cicadas. So if you have cicadas in your yard, don't worry that the cicadas are coming out of the Blue Ridge and over the mountain to find your cicadas. This is not happening. I would imagine, however, if a cicada happened to be beneath an oak tree on the edge of a forest and they saw a cicada wiggling around on the ground, I'm quite sure that copperhead would go and eat that cicada. And I believe that's the kind of video somebody has put online, that now we're getting several panic calls about copperheads being attracted to cicadas. I don't believe that occurs. I think they are opportunistic. I know that they will, of course, hunt mice and small rodents. Hey, that's what they do. But why pass up a cicada if it happens to be in front of your nose? I think snakes will eat these things. I know turtles will. So other reptiles surely will. Why not a copperhead? But you don't have to worry that your yard will be filled with copperheads as a result of the cicadas that might be in your landscape. So please put that fear to rest.
All right, good.
Okay.
So I'm going to pick up on cicada recipes, and maybe maybe you can start with a simple one. Not everybody's going to get the cicada cookbook, but before I finish that question, Do you need to catch them live, or can you pick up a cicada that you find out in your backyard? And then number three, what do they taste like? What if someone's going to imagine? Now, of course, it depends on how you prepare it, I'm sure. But what should the expectation be? Is this like a chicken feet type of thing, or is this, I don't know, like a bacon type of thing? So let's hear it. How are we eating cicadas?
You know, Tom, you might be able to make bacon out of them, I don't think, or maybe jerky of some kind. I don't think anybody's tried. But, okay, look. So what if you want, they're a delicacy, I think. I don't think they're going to be a main ingredient for human beings. Certainly many other creatures on the planet are going to feast on these things, but we will try them as a delicacy. Now, what I will say is I have been challenged before by TV crews on morning shows to eat cicadas. I am always happy to oblige with this. So to really find out what a cicada tastes like, what I usually do is wait till they emerge at dusk. And again, this is a mechanism to avoid predators. So as the sun begins to wane, they will come out by the bajillions out of the ground. They will go to vertical structures, trees, houses. If you stand still, you. They will shed their skin, and from the skin will emerge the adult cicada. Now, at that point in time, those cicadas are soft-shelled cicadas. They're just like a soft-shelled crab. The exoskeleton has not hardened. What I would do, if I really wanted to see what they taste like, I would find one of those cicadas that hasn't completely emerged or is in some way deformed. That way you're not interfering with their normal life cycle. Many of these will get stuck in their shell. Some of them will have deformed wings or have other complications. Those are the ones I would prefer to eat. So the healthy ones can go about their business. The other guys are not making it. I simply pop them in my mouth. You know, it's the same strategy as eating an oyster, raw bar, or a clam. And for some reason, Western culture is hung up on this. I don't get it. I mean, you guys know, Annie, you know what an oyster does for a living, or a clam. It sits at the bottom of the Chesapeake Bay and it filters out. You know what? People eat these things. So why wouldn't you eat a creature that's been feeding on plant sap for 17 years? They have a very buttery texture, and they've got kind of a nutty flavor. I think that may be from the tannins of the trees they feed on. And they're very delicate to eat. Now, back to your question, Tom. You can go out right now. You can excavate cicada nymphs, we call them. These are the immature stages. I recommend, if you're going to do that, you wash them, get the dirt off. Of course, there's, you know, silicon particles in your teeth. Not good. So get those things washed off, and then we recommend freezing them. This would be a humane way to dispatch the cicadas rather than doing the lobster trick and putting them in boiling water and hearing them go, squeak, squeak, squeak. Don't do that. Oh, God. Freeze them first. Then you can prepare them any way you like. I've got a recipe here for cicada stir fry. This weekend, I'm going to whip up a batch of what we call emergence cookies. It's like a chocolate cookie that looks like the earth or the pile of mud. And we'll put a little cicada right on top, kind of like a little jelly bean or, you know, an Oreo cookie that's got the, you eat the cicada last, of course. So there are lots of ways to prepare them. And again, they're just going to have a very delicate flavor. You know, it's not strong. And I believe it's a delicacy. So that's how I'm going to roll with it this
because time. Of you, Dr. Rob, I will be trying at least one cicada this season.
Okay.
All right.
So wait, do you eat the wings and the feet too, or just like the
body? No. Remember now, when the nymphs come out of the ground, they don't have wings. They do have legs. They're going to be a little crunchy, but that's okay. Okay. If you're going to eat adults, and this is, you made an allusion earlier to Jay Leno. Back in 2013, I was invited. Somehow an NBC producer saw me goofing around with a Today Show crew or something. And they said, well, how would you like to go to California and see if you could get Jay Leno to eat a cicada? And I said, well, how could I resist? So I smuggled a couple dozen out in my carry-on. They had them prepared very nicely. They were on a little skewer, kind of lined up six of them. We had taken off the legs and the wings so they didn't get stuck in anybody's teeth. The other guest that night happened to be Russell Crowe, who had just finished the Superman movie. So I went through the shtick like I'm doing now, being the scientist explaining this. And then Leno says, he said, well, Professor Raup, does anything eat cicadas? And I said, well, Jay, of course. I said, look, I said, look at this. And I popped one in my mouth. I said, Jay, I'll give you $1 if you eat one. So as I turned to Jay, Russell, who's now kind of sitting behind me, says, he whispers, he says, I'm not going to eat that, mate. So the producer said I had to offer one to him. So I turned to Jay and I said, I'll give you $1 if you eat one. He popped one in his mouth.
Wow.
And he chewed it up. And then he takes the skewer and he points it at Russell and he says, Superman's father, like this. And I didn't know what to do. But Russell Crowe said, no thanks, mate. There are no cicadas on Krypton. So that's how it wound up, and it was lots of good fun. So we'll probably be eating some more cicadas this year down the road. So Tom and Andy, give it a try.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not a big, I mean, in general, I'm not the biggest fan of insects, but I don't know. It's definitely piqued my curiosity. So,
okay. One caution though, gang, if you're going to eat them, if you have an allergy to shrimp or to prawns, don't do it, because the same allergen that's found in the exoskeleton of shrimp and prawns is likely to be found in the exoskeleton. These are all arthropods, remember, of cicadas. So if you have that kind of an allergy, please don't attempt to eat cicadas. Okay?
Wow. So like no cicada guacamole for those folks. That's basically it, right?
Yeah, that's off limits. But hey, you know, I haven't tried cicada
guac. I know. Guac. I think you might be honest with
I have had cicada tacos. I got a recipe for chirper tacos. So.
Well, you know, if they're kind of buttery, like why not just, you know, mush them up and put them in the guac?
You could certainly do that. And hey, you know, insect protein, we're kind of goofy here in Western culture, but you know, in other parts of the world, gang, bugs are definitely on the menu. You go to Asia, parts of Africa, insects can constitute as much as 20% of the protein in a diet. And they are highly nutritious. They're higher in protein and lower in fat than a prime steak. So, you know, bugs, I think, in the next century are definitely going to be more on the menu than they are today.
And also, I imagine with as many cicadas as you're predicting, people are going to have some involuntary cicada guacamole if they have an outdoor picnic.
Yeah, that could happen.
Just got to make sure the chips are not in a vertical structure so they don't stick to the chips. That's the plan.
Well, you know, I have had several calls from mothers of the bride who are saying, oh my God, I planned a Memorial Day wedding. What shall I do? I said, well, listen. I said, go for it. You're going to have maybe a couple thousand guests that you didn't invite, but it will make that wedding all the more memorable. I promise they will never forget it. Or have it before the 1st of May or the 4th week in June and you'll miss it. So that's the
other thing. And isn't it true, Dr. Raup, that there are, and I know this is slightly outside of your specialty, but there are people that intentionally plan their weddings in relation to cicadas?
I've had several people call from as far away as California knowing when to come, where they can come to see the best cicadas. So I'm getting those phone calls. I'm also getting a lot of phone calls from people that say, hey, you know, this is a little bit too much for me. And for those people, there are three things that I tell them. Number one, try to learn as much as you can about the cicadas right now. Go to our website. It's called Cicada Crew UMD. We have FAQs, lots of information on cicadas. Learn about them. Try to understand what they are. They're not going to bite. They're not going to sting. They're not going to carry away small children and dogs like the monkeys in the Wizard of Oz. That's not happening. It's not how they roll. So learn about them. Maybe understand them. If this is still a little too much, go talk to a counselor about it, you know, explain what's up, get some help in trying to deal with this because it is going to happen. This is like Halley's Comet. We're not changing it. This will happen. And finally, if it's too much for you, and I've had several people I've advised on this, get out of town. No cicadas in Ocean City. No cicadas in Bethany. No cicadas in upstate New York. None in Florida. None in California. So just get out of town for a couple weeks if it's going to be too much.
So why aren't there any on the coast in Bethany, Ocean City?
Excellent question. That's a question I get. I don't know the full answer to. These cicadas have evolved the 15 broods I've talked about. There are actually 12 broods of 17-year and 3 broods of 13-year cicadas. They evolved during the ice ages over the last probably 400,000 or 500,000 years as glaciers moved up and down the Appalachian Mountains. Now, I'm guessing what happened is as sea levels rose and fell, and they do as the earth warms and cools, I'm guessing places like Ocean City were just underwater. And cicadas can hold their breath for a little while, but they can't do it for 100 years. I know this. So I'm guessing at some point in time during periods of glaciation, the opportunity for cicadas to colonize places on the eastern shore probably just didn't happen. It may also have to do with the sandy soil conditions or some other phenomenon we don't really understand, but that's my best guess at it.
Gotcha. I love that upstate New York didn't have any. That's why I didn't know any when I was growing up.
Well, not this year. There is a brood in upstate, but it doesn't happen there this year.
Gotcha. Oh man. All right. So I last year, because of the pandemic, I started gardening and I started doing a little bit of, this and that. And I have a lemon tree. And so I brought my lemon tree in for the winter and I'd like to bring my lemon tree back out. So do I bring my lemon tree back out or do I leave my lemon tree inside the house? Because now I'm like, it's a tall structure. Is it going to fall over? Or they're probably not going to eat the lemons, but is it going to damage the tree?
Okay. That's a great question. Yeah. Remember, Tom, you posed this question a little earlier this evening. Basically, remember I said that after the teenagers and the big boy been in the treetop and they hook up and mate, the females move to small branches about the size of my pinky. They're going to then insert eggs. Each female can lay from 400 to 600 eggs. Mm. Once she's depositing these eggs with a structure we call an ovipositor, it's a hard structure that she cuts slits into the branch with, and then she'll put 20 or 30 eggs in each egg nest. When cicada densities are very high, this damage will cause branches to break and flag. They will turn brown. Now, on mature, well-established trees, scientific studies have demonstrated that there will be no long-lasting, long-term effect on established mature trees. You'll see some flagging. You can prune it off. Don't worry about it. On your lemon tree, Annie, and young saplings, because they have many of these very elongated, open branching structures that are just the right size, they can be severely damaged and in some cases killed. So what we're recommending, what our studies have proven, what other studies have proven, the data tells us the best way to protect those trees is not to spray pesticides on your cicadas. Because if you spray them, you're going to kill 10 one day. 2 days later, there are going to be 20 more. You're going to spray again. 2 days later, 30 more. This has been done in orchards. It did not stop the damage. What you do is you wrap your trees in cicada netting. That netting should have a gap or a mesh size of 1 centimeter or less. That's about 3/8 of an inch. If you go too big, the cicadas can get through and lay their eggs. So we're recommending that people enclose their trees in cicada netting. This is going to prevent that damage. You put it over the top, you tie it around the bottom so birds or reptiles, snakes can't climb in and get caught in there. Mm-hmm. That's going to do the trick for you. So if you're going to put the lemon out, I'm not saying don't do it. How tall is it? About 5-6 feet?
It's about 6-7 feet at this point.
Okay, if it's 6-7, you can still do it. If you want to put it out, go ahead. You can buy the cicada netting online. Very shortly, we're gonna on our Cicada Crew website, we're going to have a video to show people how to net a tree. They're working on it as I speak. I'm hoping it's going to be up this week. and go ahead and put it outside. Now, you want to get your netting on when you start to see the adult cicadas emerging. In our area here in the DMV in Howard County, we're going to see the first trickle of them maybe as early as the last week in April. Okay. We're going to see more and more, kind of a crescendo, the first 2 weeks of May. And then the cicada palooza is going to hit the last 2 weeks of May and the first week of June. Okay. Data from last year that we collected demonstrated that 50% of your population is going to appear during those last 2 weeks and the first week of June. Gotcha. So that's when the big boy band is going to crank up, and you have to have that netting in place. They're going to be around for a couple more weeks, but you'll then see them tailing off. You'll see them showing up under trees, and that's the time you can take your netting off. You're going to be safe.
Yeah. It's 17 years ago okay. We had Amazon, but I presume that Amazon was not what it was now, and I would also presume that there's probably going to be a run on cicada netting right when we are in the midst of all this. So get your cicada netting now.
Like ordering now.
And be ready for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wrote it down. So Dr. I'll be ordering as soon as the show's over.
Dr. Rapp, my daughter, 6 years old, and loves nature, loves everything about it, is always wanting to go on hikes and things like that. What are some fun things that, I mean, you are obviously excited about cicadas. You're getting me excited about cicadas. What are things that we can do with our kids to sort of enjoy this, you know, once every 17 year phenomenon and have them really, I guess, thrive in it?
Yeah, Tom, I've got a 5 and a 7-year-old granddaughter. We're already talking about cicadas. We showed them the pictures. I'm going to take them out on a cicada safari sometime in the next couple of weeks. Next time when they come and visit, we'll actually go out. We're going to put the shovel in the ground like you might have seen on my my bug of the week last week. I'll show them what the cicadas look like once they're up and out of the ground. We're going to collect the cicada shells. I've already got several mason jars full of cicada shells from 2004. We're going to maybe catch some and hold them. We'll throw them up in the air and see if they can fly. We'll listen to the big chorus, the boy band, as it occurs in the trees. They love to construct things, so you can actually take the cicada shells. I've seen people make little sculptures out of them, like transformer robots made out of cicada shells. Pretty cool. Just get them out there to kind of enjoy the show. Now, the other thing that I'm recommending people do, we have a wonderful app. It's called Cicada Safari. It's a free download for Apple and Android systems. Download the app. You go out. When you see something, you think it's a cicada, you snap a picture. It's geo-referenced as it comes into the database, which is being maintained by my colleague Gene Kritsky out at St. Joe's University in Cincinnati. We then collect that data and we use it to map the geographic distribution of cicadas, because that's still largely unknown. And also that business I talked about, them emerging those last 2 weeks of May, hey, that's data from Cicada Safari that we collected last year that allows me to predict when we're going to see cicadas appear this year. So we're going to use this data. So that's going to be a lot of fun for parents and kids to go out and, look at cicadas and just kind of enjoy the big show. Yeah,
so one, everybody get that app. I'm going to get that app. But two, we talked about what to be excited about. What's some mayhem that cicadas cause that, because it's been 17 years, people forget about? What are the things they clog up? What are people not sort of, what precautions do they not take that they should be thinking of now?
Yeah, the only real concern that people should have is that damage to the trees. I mean, I guess we got helmet laws here in Maryland now, but I can remember, growing up in places, I'd be on my bike and at 60 miles an hour, if one of those things zings you, it's going to leave a dent. So be sure if you're riding to put on that helmet, keep the visor down. They're kind of like bumbly creatures. I mean, people say, oh my God, they're flying, they're getting on my hair. They're just, they're just trying to get up to the party in the treetop. You happen to be away. They're not attracted to you. They're just bumping into you. They're going to land on you. So when they land on you, you say, oh, you're so beautiful here. And just flip them up in the air. They're going to take off again. So try not to freak out. There are going to be lots of them. There are going to be places where they make the road slick. So, you know, when you see a lot of cicadas on the road, slow down. Okay, that's a good idea. Drive straight, no sharp turns, no fast braking, you'll be okay. Try just to enjoy this thing, not freak out too much.
Wow. All right, man. Well, okay, so I'm going to wait for dusk. I'm going to pull one as it's coming out. Make sure I remove the wings, and then I'm going to take off the legs, or am I going to freeze it first? And then I'm going to do that.
Well, I tell you, if you're going to get the soft-shelled cicada, when that shell splits open, it's going to take about an hour. You will actually see the adult cicada begin to puff up. It kind of pumps itself up like Hans and Franz. It pumps up. And you'll see it come out of that shell. The wings will then begin to unfold, and it's just spectacularly beautiful at that point in time. As I said, I usually try to find ones that get stuck halfway out of the shell. They're not going to make it. So those would be your soft-shelled cicadas. And that one you could simply take. It's not going to have any dirt on it. You can simply pop it in your mouth and eat it just as you would an oyster or a raw clam. All right, you could do that.
All right, I can do that.
If you don't want to do that, you can certainly take those cicada nymphs, wash them, freeze them, and then use them in any kind of recipe you like. That would work. If you're going to eat adult cicadas, yes, please do. Capture the cicadas. You can, again, freeze them. So you give them, don't put them in a frying pan when they're still alive. That's uncool. So freeze them, humane kill, and then take off the wings and the legs, because, you know, when you have cicada wings sticking out of your mouth, it will be disagreeable for your partners. So don't do that. Get the wings and legs off. You don't want them stuck in your teeth. Okay.
Perfect. Thank you. I needed that quick primer there. Just.
Okay.
All right. Well, I am going to go into our fun questions, and in honor of our fourth anniversary, I'm going to call it what we called it on our first show, which is rapid fire. And the first question is, Dr. Raup, what is the last book, movie, and music recommendation you made to a friend or family member? So you have to hit all three: book, movie, and music.
Oh God. What was it? Book was Where the Crawdads Sing. Music. Oh boy. Last recommendation.
And if you can't think of a last recommendation, you can make one now. And it's just a music that you would recommend people listen to.
Well, you know, coming up, It was the Dylan song. I think it was called The Day of the Locust. And the locust he was talking about were actually periodical cicadas that emerged in Princeton. It was a 2004 Brood 17, and it was during his concert, I think. So he wrote a song called The Day of the Locust, I believe. So listen to Dylan. Right. That's always good advice,
and
right?
How about a movie?
That is.
Oh, what's a good movie that I've seen recently? Well, God, you know, we're watching reruns right now. Let's see. I'm even trying to think what the last movie was. You know, I've been working my way through all the Avenger movies and stuff like that. I have to say, you know, for the first time I saw, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and you know, the soundtrack for those things, you know, it makes me melt. It takes me right back to my youth, you know, the soundtrack's there. So, you know, I haven't seen any of the new movie releases. I'm looking forward to some of those. That'll be great. But hey, haven't done that yet.
What's the Guardians?
Yeah, Guardians. All right, Annie. Cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, this is always a fun question. What's the most unpopular, benign opinion that you hold? So we know, like Tom's is, he doesn't like cake, which is, I don't even understand that, but that's.
Although I have to change it because I had some really good cake from a third sponsor, and then I had really good cake on my son's birthday. So I need a new one.
So
benign.
Like mine is that I don't like it when people put their windshield wipers up in the wintertime, because when you flip them down, you're just going to break your windshield wind wipers anyway. So don't do that. You look silly.
A benign one. Well, you know, I don't like clowns, but that's more of a like. I don't, that might fit in with the cake thing. There's just something about clowns that seems wrong. And I can't put my finger on it. Maybe it's the same thing as the cake, Tom. I'm not sure. So, yeah, I don't mean to offend clowns or magicians or anything like that, but there's just something about clowns. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you already suggested that we eat bugs earlier today. So I think that we're good.
I know.
You got yeah. These opinions in spades.
Yeah.
Okay. What if any podcasts are you listening to? What's your regular listenership, if you listen to podcasts at all?
Oh, you know, I've been so busy lately. I have not listened to too many podcasts. I try to catch the ones, you know, on NPR and catch up with some of those ones. But, this last 6 months has just been pretty berserko between the regular job and now Cicada Mania is underway. So, yeah, not
that's
too many,
fine.
But yeah, thanks.
So the next question is, I have to qualify it. So what is the best meal that you've had in Howard County? It can't be something that someone's made for you. It's got to be something that like I can go out and buy too.
Or if you've not had meals in Howard County, it can be in Maryland.
Yeah, no. We've been living on the Trattoria. There is a Trattoria, a pizzeria in King's Contrivance on Guilford Road. And these guys are the real deal. As you might have divined, I grew up in New Jersey. So to have New York style pizza made real is just delightful. So we love to eat their Polisipo. It's a seafood dish full of wonderful shellfish and pasta and a marinara sauce. Mwah! So my hat's off to those guys. They are my go-to.
That's awesome.
All right, Dr. Ralph, this is the question that we end all of our podcasts with, and that is, what do we all need to do to elevate Maryland?
We just have to be kind. We just have to be kind to each other, to people we don't know, kind to the earth, kind to cicadas. I think we share this planet with many, many other things, and we share it with many other kind of people from all different persuasions. We need to keep that in mind. Hey, we're all related. Tom and Annie, I don't know if you realize it, but you share 80% of your genes with an insect. You are 80% a bug. And Annie, if you find this disconcerting, you also share half your genes with a banana. You're half a banana. That makes you feel better. So
cannibalism, you know, every day. That's what you're
saying.
We're all
one, guys. We're all one. This world is one. We're one. Just be kind to each other. Be kind to the planet. Be kind to cicadas, and it's going to be a better place.
Well, this has been such a great interview and such a great note to end on. And we appreciate how much you are putting into helping us appreciate this once in every 17-year experience. I know that you've enriched my view on it, and all the work you're doing in Howard County. You're about to speak at the Conservancy, and then about to be on CBS Sunday Morning. So thank you so much for all that work.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. It's my passion. And hey, you know what? I'm a public servant, so thank you very much for writing my paycheck every month. And, that's what we do. So great fun, and thank you so much for letting me join your viewers tonight and for welcoming me to your podcast. This has been a lot of fun this evening. So thanks a lot, Annie, Tom, and good luck out
there.
All
right, thank you, Dr.
Enjoy those
Ralph.
Cicadas.
Have a great night.
Yep.
All right, Annie, so now we are going to do our three things. We're going to start with what I kicked off the show with, which is our 4-year podiversary. Much as I love having you here, obviously sad that Candace can't be here with us. If only we could like zoom her in for this part of the show, but Elevate Maryland, we celebrated our 100th show last year with the county executive. We're sort of, I'll say this, I'm ready to do live shows again. The production burden of these shows, I mean, just even doing Facebook Live, is it often crashes. But putting all that aside, this has been one of the most fulfilling things I've undertaken. I'm so appreciative for you and all the times that you've come in as a guest co-host, and very thankful for our listeners. But you know, it's crazy. Like, the years just keep stacking up. And so wanted to just say thank you to everybody for giving us a platform, because without listeners, we probably wouldn't do this. I mean, I might still do it. I probably would do something like this, so long as people would be willing to come on the show. I doubt I would get as quality of a guest as Dr. Raup, but maybe, I mean, maybe someone wants to talk to me. It's just, I learned something new every time we do it. So
yeah, no, congratulations to you and Candace. I think this has been phenomenal. And I know I've voted. There's a podcast of the year.
Oh, yeah,
podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Added the hosts, Candace and Tom, to that. So yeah, for sure. Cause I think it's great. I mean, in general, I'd say that, you know, you've got folks that are from all over. You've had not only elected officials, you've had folks like Mike, you've had all sorts of people, and it has been phenomenal. It's been a new source for many. It has been a way for people to kind of understand and digest the news that they wouldn't otherwise be able to. And it's a great way to just to reach out to people locally within Howard County. And I know the work that you guys are doing with the third has been phenomenal as well. That's been great. So overall, I think you guys have done a fantastic job. The podcast has been great. I'm always happy to guest co-host. And I do miss the days when they were live too, mainly because I could grab dinner at places like State Fair and then go home.
Yes.
So
we will be doing that again soon. And maybe, because how it might time out, maybe by the time that we're opening back up, we might have a show or two at Busboys and Poets, which has been an aspiration of this podcast for some time. So thank you for that, Annie. You know, for whatever reason, it just hasn't really hit me today. You know, a lot of things flying by me. With actually, my work anniversary is the same month as the podiversary, so those type of things going on. But yeah, so it's awesome. Very excited, and 4 years. That's kind of cool. What are you thinking about?
Awesome. I've been thinking about local news. Yes. I've been reading about the Save Our Son campaign. Project, I heard it was called Project Mayhem when they added it to other locations in the country. So I don't know if you know, but the Tribune Publishing owns a number of newspapers in the country, and there have been some there's a group that wanted to take them over, and it was kind of like it's a little bit worrisome because the journalists they're not really sure about the folks taking them over. And as a result, a number of nonprofit organizations and some billionaire benefactors are considering purchasing it and making it a nonprofit, which I think would be fantastic, because one of the issues that we've had with local journalism in general and just journalism in general is that they need paywalls to exist. They need subscribers. You're seeing that with Substack and Medium and other places where journalists are now moving to be able to write for money. And what I'm finding is that instead of being able to find like an old newspaper after someone's read it, which is free, you don't have that opportunity anymore. And so the news is not being distributed equally across the country, and definitely not locally. And what worries me about that is that then they're getting only the free sources of news, and those free sources of news are often biased. You've got whether it's television stations that are free that you don't have to worry about, where you don't have to worry about cable, or news organizations online that are publishing for free as well. And that is worrisome. I mean, we don't know who's paying them on the back end. And I think if overall it is better for everyone, if the Baltimore Sun and other newspapers owned by Tribune Publishing are owned by a nonprofit organization. I'd be very happy with that. So that's exciting. And that's really it. I love local news. I used to read the newspaper growing up, a local newspaper almost every day growing up. And I miss that. And so now if we can get the Baltimore Sun to be locally owned, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So the entity that is looking to take over the Tribune papers, they already own 30%. It's Alden is the name of the company. And what they do, and I called them evil on Facebook the other day, and someone said, why are they evil? And I don't know, maybe I should have been more careful with my word choice, but you end up staring them in the face so long, you end up thinking they're evil. They buy newspapers, which very often have real estate. And the real estate is in the center of cities, which means it's very valuable real estate. And then they downsize, they shift all their journalists somewhere else, they flip the real estate over for some more profitable enterprise, sell the real estate, sell off the equipment, replace the news stories by local journalists with AP Newswire. And the next thing you know, you're reading US News on the letterhead of your local paper. And if you notice, if you are a subscriber to the Baltimore Sun, you'll notice that that has already begun to happen, partly in Alden's defense, partly due to people, the model has changed. So there's many bad guys in this story. Another bad guy is social media, in that social media is where a lot of the advertising revenue that would previously support local newspapers is going. You've got Facebook Marketplace. How many people have bought their couch or sold their couch on Facebook Marketplace? You're not doing classifieds anymore. So there are many different bad guys, many different solutions that need to happen. But as you identified, there's a great opportunity in a not-for-profit entity taking ownership here, because at the very least, you lose the requirement to have that margin. All corporations have an obligation to make profit for their shareholders. If they do not produce profit for their shareholders, they can be sued. So you lose that obligation and you can reinvest that back into your journalists. But I'm already probably going too long, but when I've been working with Save Our Sun, one of the saddest things that I've seen is that as the Save Our Sun group has gotten some momentum and has hopefully set itself up for what looks to be, I mean, we're a long way to go, but it's certainly better looking than it was months ago. All of these other newspapers and all of their unions, you know, we would be on calls late into the night talking about strategies and what they could do. And they would see us getting ourselves into a good spot. And they would say, all right, well, what can we do? Because once Alden owns you, Alden ain't selling you, or at least Alden's not going to sell you with anything left. They'll sell your husk. Right. So yes, local news, important. Please subscribe. And to Annie's point, if you are not able to subscribe, if that investment is not available to you, please always consult your library. Howard County Library makes a lot of these news sources available to all library card holders. So don't just give up on reading the news or say, hey, could you copy and paste it on Facebook? Because when you copy and paste it on Facebook, you are doubling down on the bad thing and it is gross. Please don't do it. So there's that. So the thing we're ending on, and I didn't really mean to end on this note, but this is just how it laid out, is that it does look like the sanctuary legislation passed by the county council, sponsored by Councilmember Opal Jones, is going to be on the ballot in 2022. This is, you know, the Howard County Republican Party has less registered voters today than it did in 2018. I'm not saying less of a percentage of the vote. I'm saying less actual people are registered as Republicans in Howard County now than there were in the last election. But nevertheless, they were able to score a substantial victory because they were fighting a disarmed opponent. The Howard County Democratic Party seems more interested in chasing down heretics in its ranks and doing purity tests regarding things such as the ICE contract than it is actually engaging in what the Republican Party is attempting to do. And, you know, that goes, listen, if that's what the activists want to do, if they find that that is the profitable place to put their energy to call out Howard County's first African-American county executive, to call out Dr. Jones, who got this legislation passed, to call out the youngest council member ever elected, Christiana Rigby, for various things. If that is where they think their energy is best spent, you know, go ahead and do it. You obviously, with all of the elections you've won, you obviously know what you're doing. You obviously have it well in hand with all of your successful electoral experience underway. But if maybe you haven't been successful, if maybe if you've never won an election, maybe you should take this as a wake-up call to say that politics isn't so easy, that you can end up losing things that really matter because you're fighting over things that just make you feel good. Yelling at somebody and telling them they're not a real Democrat, that they're not a real progressive, maybe that feels good. But this is one that you got to hang on the party as a whole. You got to hang it on activists, and hey, you got to hang it on people like you and me. I mean, we saw this coming. There wasn't much that there wasn't any mobilization to stop it other than saying, hey, this might be bad. So I was just sad to see that and didn't want to have it go without some sort of mention.
That has been frustrating. I mean, I know, I was approached by someone who said, you know, do you support the sanctuary status in the county? And I was like, yeah, for sure I do. And he's like, well, you should sign this then if you believe in it. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. I'm not super clued in, but I'm pretty clued in enough to know that CB 63 passed and that we were a sanctuary county. And so it was kind of under the radar. They did it, and it wasn't. And as soon as we started realizing how many people had been approached in grocery store parking lots and other places, we realized it wasn't really underground at all. And the fact that we were unable, that the Democratic Party and certain party activists did not feel like it was an issue to touch or it was an issue to worry about, but instead they're pulling, I don't know, they're trying to pull the big tent in a different direction, or I'm not sure what they're doing.
Making the tent smaller.
Sure. They're trying to leave people out of the tent for some reason. But they're also leaving an entire area open for Republicans to come in and do things like this that don't help our county at all. So whatever gains we may have gotten in the last few years by having, again, our first African-American county executive, a number of other folks that we have in the county now, we're going to lose all those gains. And for what? For someone to score some dunking points on Facebook or on Twitter? Like, you got enough likes? I mean, it's unfortunate. It really is. It makes me sad. It makes me realize that this is one of the reasons why people are going to engage less in politics, and not because politics is some sort of game, but rather it is something where we can make a difference. And here we are not making a difference. And that is upsetting to me. That more than anything else is frustrating, and it is difficult, and it makes me realize that nobody wants to, why would you stick your neck out and run if you're going to be attacked by everybody? Not just if you're a Democrat, you're going to be attacked by Republicans, but also your own folks too. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to talk to you in a way that, you know, makes sense. They can't actually tell you what they feel, but rather they're just going to attack.
Yeah,
it's frustrating. It's really frustrating.
In many respects, the quarantine has made it worse, because normally there would be that instance in which you'd be in the same room with this person, and you would be like, "What's up? Like, what is up? Like, you keep saying all this stuff about my friends and I. What's wrong with you?" Because it's not normal. It is not normal to write 10 pages of attacks on individuals because you're sad you lost an election, or I don't know what it is. You feel like you're not being heard. Like, that's not normal behavior. And the fact that we don't share rooms together anymore. And I am as bad now. I'm not writing 10 pages of stuff on people, but I have felt myself be less humane and less empathetic to my fellow people that I should be aligned with because I'm not sharing space with them. And I pulled myself back on that. And part of that is from my good friend Candace advising me to do so. But we're going to get back in those rooms and I will be asking what is up. I will be having that conversation. And I've been thinking of like, man, maybe if I invite so-and-so out for a coffee, for a beer, like maybe we could talk this through. But, you know, I am always up for that. So if you hate listening to this show, if you are here for Annie and just want me to stop talking, I am always up for getting together and talking. And no matter how much we might have disagreed in the past, I'm sure that we can find something to start from home base on. But all this stuff, this nonsense has to stop because as you very well identified, the biggest thing that's happening is that we are missing opportunities to do good. Doing good is the only reason why this podcast exists. It's the I know it's why you're engaged. Certainly why I'm engaged. It's the reason why I take time away from my family to do this kind of stuff because I want to do good. And we're missing the opportunity to do good. And some of that space is being filled with just throwing mud at each other. And that's what deters other people from wanting to do good. It is much better to go into crocheting or gardening or spending all, and there's nothing wrong with those things, but it's much more fulfilling to go into those things than trying to do good if your name is going to be attacked, because you decided to volunteer your time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I've seen comments like that on social media as well, where people have said, you know, seeing all this, I don't want to be involved. Why would I want to be involved? And I think when we do that as a citizenry, as citizens of the United States, as community members of Howard County specifically, we are, as a friend of mine said, we are giving away our power. And I was talking to a friend today and she said, don't give away your power. Don't do that. Don't give away your power. And I think that's what this is by allowing these voices to overrun our community, we are giving away our power, which is the power of working together, the power of, I mean, it may seem like it's not true, but the power of civility, the power of being able to, you know, to talk to others and to do that good, we're losing that. And that is unfortunate.
Well, that's well said. And I have nothing to add to that. Annie, thank you so much for another great interview. This was so much fun. This was more fun than I thought it was going to be. I mean, I knew Dr. Rapp was going to be good, but I should have figured that being on all these TV shows, he was going to have a persona to bring with him. But it was just so much fun. And this will be a show that my daughter can listen to. My daughter loves podcasts, loves nature podcasts, and so she can listen to this one.
She's going to come back and be like, all right, Dad, we're getting cicadas to eat.
So. Yeah. And then she'll be like, I want to elevate Maryland to be a nature show from now on.
I mean, that'd be fun. It'd be fun. I don't know.
All right. Have a great night, Annie.
You too. Thank you.